Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified, the number one cybersecurity podcast with your host, Eric Taylor, and myself, Shiva Maharaj. And today we are joined with Matt Lee of Pax8, Alan Liska of Recorded Future, Vince Chrysler of Darkcubed, and Javier Salinas of Blackpoint Cyber. What's up, boys?
Good morning.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hey,
I'm so happy to do this podcast today to announce that finally there's no more cybercrime. Our jobs are over.
Matt solved it.
Sanctions worked.
I'm about to flip my desk and throw my chair.
I knew you might.
So wait, does that mean we actually have to go be ditch diggers now since there's no more need for cybersecurity?
I'll just go back to being a Sparky.
All right, and speak for yourself, man. I'm going to go drive a truck. Apparently, there's going to be a shortage of those for a while.
It's a nice fit.
Yeah. Nice turn.
It was great. So what do you guys want to talk about today?
Become a truck drivers. I'm just kidding.
For the Russians?
Yeah. So I guess we just talk about, you know, not to get too political, but I guess we'll just talk about sanctions and start and see what's going on with that one and kind of pivot, right? So, you know, what is everybody's thoughts on what's going on? I mean, take the war out of it, but take and go into the cybersecurity with the whole sanctions and stuff. You know, I guess I'll kind of start a little bit, but I was saying on, I guess, our podcast yesterday or the day before that if people really think that Russia, even though they are very used to going through the shit and being in poverty, you think you take away enough of their revenue stream and their hackers are not going to retaliate to supplement that revenue stream that they're used to getting and come attacking again? People are grossly misunderstanding the situation where, you know, there was a whole shields up movement for cybersecurity a long time ago, but you know, people really need to be on the defensive and really looking at their logs. Like if you're not looking at all of your logs right now, you need to be, because that is, you know, Vince can say it, Alec can say it, you know, Javier, even you, Matt, you can all say the logs are typically your first indication that something's a fucking foot.
Yeah. I mean, and we saw that CISA yesterday warned the state and local governments that they've got to be on heightened alert in particular because they expect retaliation to come. So
they're going to turn the extra security features on their Linksys router, right?
They're finally going to buy that advanced license.
We know they don't have Linksys routers. They only have the microchip ones.
Yeah. You know, speaking of
physical, we all know the support's expired.
Speaking of physical devices, I saw someone complaining about Blackpoint Cyber needing a physical device and if there was a cheaper way to do it.
A physical device?
I think your Snap device.
Yeah, our Snap device.
So I guess, Alan, how in tune with the municipalities are you?
That's one of the areas that I follow most closely.
Okay, the reason I ask, and I replied to your tweet this morning, I'm in New Jersey, so you have little fiefdoms / towns with their own local government and what have you. Yep. Every time I go in to pitch IT services, I'm like, hey, can you insert this USB drive, install the application, and give me administrative credentials? And they're like, sure, no problem. No vetting, no nothing. And the email comes over in plain text. And I was telling the guys before we went live, I have to rely on my email system to reject the email because it's plain text passwords. Works sometimes, but not all the time. So I think we have a very long way to go for the municipalities, because I think those are the low hanging fruit in terms of access to CJIS control systems.
Yeah, I mean, so if not the municipalities, then the schools, right? You know, and the same, you know, the same kind of concerns apply there. I know that I know that CISA's done a lot of work with municipalities and schools and so on, but we still have such a long way to go. And of course, there are so many of them. And as you say, each one is essentially an individual cybersecurity entity. You know, there are some exceptions. I think like North Dakota has done a really good job of centralizing everything at the state level. But for the most part, it's a free for all, and you never know what you're going to get.
I thought Maryland was having an initiative to, you know, standardize it as well. Is that correct, or am I smoking crack over here?
No, I think you are right. I think there are more and more. So Texas is another one. I think there are more and more states that are having to take back control and do that. I think that's a good thing. You know, you're never, as a small town, even in New Jersey, as a small town, you're never going to be able to hire security staff. It's just that you don't have budget for it.
So oh, yeah, they have budget. Because
no,
Go ahead.
Matt, go ahead. You start.
We're having a Canadian standoff here. Kansas State did a legislative post audit, an LPA, asking security controls that were in place for the last 10 years or so in state and county governments. And so when they did that, they came back with the results, and everyone was at like 40% max, right? And nobody had any stuff going, and they basically just shelved the LPA. They just essentially at the state level said, well, guess we know where we are. Moving on. That was the requirement. And there was nothing that changed. Like they had the findings weren't required to be checked. I mean, we did them at the couple of state, legislation that we worked with or state organizations we worked with, but there was stuff like having no DMZ and an ancient version of Unix running an application that held every single state officer's, credentials, home addresses, PII, PHI, training regimens, like all of that was behind an ancient, and I can't remember the OS that it was, but it's a good one and you guys would remember it, but it no longer is in production. And so
yeah, I thought you were talking about pfSense for a second there.
No, but this was literally just, the way the whole state kind of took it. And I think, Alan, to your point, if the state owned it and the state budgeted for it at a macro budget level, they could have economies of scale. There's 300 counties in the state of Kansas. It gets crazy.
If CJIS is controlling the access to a lot of these systems, why not make it federal? If you're taking federal money to get your municipality up to scratch security wise for CJIS connected systems, just let the government do it and toss this whole self attestation nonsense.
I mean, in my
that'll view, go over well.
States don't want the federal government to own them. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
there's a why? State because federal separation.
Are you telling me the mayor of my town will no longer allow his son to be the IT guy for the town?
Yeah.
But if you're in 50 states and you set a federal mandate that says, here's the requirements and here's the arm length and here's the budget requirements.
It's probably going to work as well as a mask mandate.
Oh, touche. But you only have 50 people to chase down. You can deal with 50. I'm sorry.
To me, it's like,
cut you off.
I think in the industry, we always deal with this cognitive dissonance around like, what you see happening publicly in security, you see the alerts from CISA, you see the alerts from the FBI, you see a lot of marketing and advertising about all the sophistication complexity people need to be worrying about for cybersecurity.
Right.
And then you walk in the door of one of these places and they, I'm going to exaggerate a little bit, but they have like Windows 3.1 with no firewall.
And it's right.
It's like things are far worse off, I think, in most of these places than most people realize. And I don't know how we start to, and to me, I hate this idea of like a floor or kind of these common security standards, but there's got to be something that like raises the floor on this. And I don't know what it is.
Or to Matt Lee's raise the tide, but nobody does.
So Vince, it's funny. I was helping a town out that suffered a ransomware attack. This is a couple years ago. And the only two machines that didn't have the ransomware on them had Windows 98 running.
It was just too young to be
sure that the encryption libraries weren't there for the ransomware executable to.
The encryption libries weren't there. That's just a.
The headline recorded future advises downgrading to Windows 98.
No. But there will be people out there saying that now.
Yeah, no. I've seen, man, just remove all encryption libraries.
Protection by obsolescence.
I've had a lot of pushback from saying, but I stand by it, that if I were advising a small business right now that wanted to know how to protect themselves from ransomware and couldn't have an IT staff or doesn't have a security staff or could afford to hire an MSSP, I tell them to buy Macs, because I've never seen a mass ransomware incident on Macs. And people are like, well, there's ransomware for Mac. I'm like, yeah, I know there is, but I've still never seen a mass ransomware incident on a mostly Mac network.
Thanks, Alan. Now we're going to get cases next week for Mac developed ransomware.
I know everyone's going to have to go out and buy Macs.
D for software.
Well, they use them for government attacks and one-to-one attacks. You see that all the time, right? Where backdoors, Trojans.
I see it all the time. I'm like, yeah.
So I have a mass company that crawled across all these Macs and ransomware. Yeah. No,
it's mainly because companies are like, what, maybe 5% less?
20 to 30% max.
Yeah. So the money's not there. So of course the e-crime's not there.
Right. So there's higher IT experience of ransomware and ESXi variants of ransomware, but we don't really see at least the big ransomware players building Mac variants. So there's just no money in it for them.
Yeah. Just trying to market share their dissidents, but you know, that's it.
Yeah. Market. But they'll steal all your credentials there.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Well, it's frustrating me on the Windows side is all on the Windows side, you've got all these functionalities that Microsoft's rolling out. And this, again, this might be a little controversial, but I don't think they're taking responsibility for having secure configurations by default. I mean, on our last call, I talked about like, I do the IT for my church. And so I did the whole Active Directory Azure AD Sync to manage my licenses. And they have this little warning thing that says, these are the things you need to do. Like you should turn on security defaults. And it's like, how do I turn on security defaults? And it's like 27 steps. It's like, no, like you should turn on security defaults by default.
Yeah,
and make me change. And so you have people rolling out this infrastructure that you can turn on with the click of a button and it's insecure by default.
Yeah. You're speaking to my heart here. I actually asked this question at a Microsoft advisory session and I said, listen, why the fuck can I even have an insecure password? Why the fuck is that even possible?
Correct.
Why is that even part of the goddamn OS? And their answer really was, we don't want to lose our constituency. We want to meet the people where they are. Like, I'm like, that is the most irresponsible thing I've ever heard in my entire life. And it's not even a difference in revenue probably for them. Like you would just get frustrated and type a longer password. Like this would drive adoption, but companies send things by default insecure. It blows my mind.
Google deployed their mandatory two-factor on all Gmail and phishing attacks went down by over 50%.
Massive.
Like, wow. You put a basic control in that should be required and it helps.
Microsoft's too disjointed to ever have one unified
font. They're very risk averse too in their OS divisions. Very, very.
So me and Shiva were bouncing around this thing on Twitter a couple of weeks back, and I'll just bring it up here because Matt Broad started saying that and reminded me, but what is y'all's thoughts on either having or not requiring complex passwords if MFA is enabled? Like a true MFA, like a push notifications, all that.
Right.
We're not, you know,
still
can users get away with weaker passwords because
I go,
you do have that push notification.
Yeah. My personal thing is it's the length of the password. I don't really care about complexity. So I force the length and I don't even force password resets as long as they have.
Yeah. I would.
Password resets don't even really mean anything as long as your password is long enough. You got MFA on them.
You're just removing the brute force and dictionary methodologies, right?
Like because that's the common stuff.
Yeah. I agree with you on that. So length. I like passphrases.
What about putting
MFA
in between the username and password prompt?
Could get some really cool fucking with people capabilities. Right? Simply re-auth on a curl command over and over again, so you get 1,000 pushes. I think that has its own challenges, Shiva.
I've seen.
Oh, there's a vendor.
Well, Keeper Security does it that way.
Yeah,
I've seen some
FIDO too.
MFA only.
Yeah. I would rather my identity and my auth live in this, right? Like that's the way I would prefer that to function. But
are you using the bio key or is it just a
regular? No, I haven't got my hands on that one yet, which does add a Type 3 authentication into the mix, right? It's fantastic.
Love it.
In fact, theoretically you could be Type 2 and Type 3 only because you no longer would necessarily have to have the password. You have a cryptographic representation of yourself. You'd add in the bio and the other side of it.
And if it gets stolen, you don't care.
Type 2 diabetes, so I'm 2/3 of the way there. You talking about a different
type? Close, man.
Yeah, sorry, sorry.
Let me know.
Not the drift of cake. No.
So I guess back on to a little bit of the topic, though, is how worried is everybody on a scale of 1 to 5? I mean, what do you think is going to be some of the
most? Let's use the dark hue scale, 1 to 9, please.
Oh, yes.
There we go. 1 to 9. What's y'all's your threat level set at, right? So, you know, in the military you have DEF CONs and stuff like that, but you know, are y'all everybody on high alert or what? Everybody's just kind of like, yeah, we're just taking a really closer look, but nothing to see here yet.
That's a good question. You know, even with the responses that we've taken, I think we've probably 70% increase this month over last month in responses. So the hackers are back from a vacation, you know, the January, December vacations. Like we're talking about like real UKIP groups and all that. So everyone's height should be, everyone's level should be pretty high. And then, you know, you got the Ukraine Russia situation. That could be a good masquerade for other types of activities going on over, you know, through that. So it's ramping up and, you know, we're seeing, you know, most of the stuff that we're seeing too is a mixture of like, you know, first step recon moves when you get in the network, mixed with a bunch of info stealers, you know, which are the pretty much the precursor to getting ransomware.
Yeah.
So it's ramping up and it just can only go up.
But is it correlated or is it just the traditional back to business is my question. So maybe I'm ignorantly giving it a four in my mind for that reason, but
you know, I mean, so we're seeing a huge uptick in QuackBot activity, which has traditionally has now become a precursor to ransomware. But I think one of the things that we really have to step back and emphasize to people is that while a lot of the big ransomware groups are headquartered in Russia, as we've seen from the arrests over the last year, the actual affiliates are spread out all over the world. And so even if whatever, we expect more stuff from Russia, the other affiliates in Romania and in Ukraine and, you know, in South Korea and freaking Canada, 3 arrests in Canada in the last 6 months.
I found evidence of a lockbit operator coming out of China. Response.
Right. You know, and so that activity is going to continue unabated no matter what goes on with the Russia situation. It may slow down negotiations or other things, but it's not going to impact all of these ransomware actors around the world. You know, we really need to emphasize that ransomware is a global phenomenon, like it or not. The bad guys behind ransomware are global, I should say.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I'm not concerned necessarily. I think it's, you know, we'll see where this all goes. You know, professionally, you know, I believe in data-driven decisions. So, you know, what I'm directing the team behind the scenes is saying, you know, let's look at the data. Is there an increase or not? Are things changing? Do we see evidence?
Nice.
Keeping everybody on alert. So, you know, we have a responsibility to help secure our customers. And so, you know, whether personally I'm concerned or not, we have a professional responsibility. And, you know, a little shameless plug here, we hired got our full-time threat researcher, Chris Granger, who came out of the House of Representatives. He did threat hunting there. He's doing our first webinar on threat tomorrow, which is really cool. So it's a big, exciting development for us.
And we'll drop the link for that webinar in the description for you guys.
Absolutely. So Alan, what do you see over there on Recorded Future? What are you guys most worried about going on right now?
So we also have a webinar coming up on Ukraine, I think later today or tomorrow, I think. You know, I'll just be upfront. I'm a malware guy, so I like to let the geopolitical experts talk about the geopolitical situation because that's out of my scope. I'm not smart enough to do that. What I can say is, again, you know, that the QuackBot activity on the rise is bad. The Conti taking over TrickBot is probably bad. You know, there are signs that there's a lot of free activity that's been, you know, and Xavier hit me on the head, that's been ramping up for the last month or so. And it's really, we're really starting to see it take off after a bit of a lull over the you know, December and early January.
Have any
Conti really bothers me because they're very successful. We've seen it too, that they're really starting to utilize the RMM tools like Atera and stuff like that heavily in their campaigns, which is
a trick. Do you think of them have exclusions for them, right? You know, you get a nice exclusion right in the directory you need to
screen connect to.
Yeah.
So here's a question for you guys, since you're on the vendor side of the MSP channel, all except for Alan. Should we kill RMM?
Yes.
RMM needs a wake up.
He's got the same capabilities being built into an Intune, into a Google management, to some degrees, Apple. But yeah, I think RMM is on its way to its death. I think
it's a spooky thing to install.
Yeah.
I did a mass uninstall of Datto RMM day on July 2nd when Kaseya had their incident.
We managed our whole MSP on Intune. All 170 employees, whatever it was, 400 or so devices, end user devices.
I'm talking about, I uninstalled it, not just from the company, from all my clients.
That's awesome.
I got spooked and I said, there's no way I'm leaving this type of legacy.
I had another client, another MSP say they did that and their impact to ROI was not all that massive.
It was maybe a 5% hit.
Yeah. They would just do on-demand sessions. Where
it was, the hardest part was building out SOPs to replace the laziness of RMM. That was the real
efficiency. It's all about efficiency.
You know, here's my thing with MSP. Dude. I own one, so I can shit on us.
I was one for 10 years, so just self-describe.
MSPs love to talk about automation and efficiency. And every time I've walked in to replace one, I didn't find either. I'm not saying I was good at it or I'm good at it, but it's a lot of smoke and mirrors.
You're pretty good at it at scale with the 20,000 endpoints, but in the same breath, I still think it's death is time. So,
but see, Matt, I think to some of the credit where you were, you had an entire team
of people on just internal efficiency gains and automation.
Exactly. So, I mean, you had, you know, a whole SWAT of people, right? So a lot of the MSPs are under, but a lot of these MSPs are underneath five people. And one of them may be an admin assistant and one may be the accounting or the dispatcher type thing. Right. So, you know, I don't think they have the resources to actually do the proper automation and security and everything.
If you fast forward a world, right. And let's go back to Vince's conversation at his church, right. I'm a pure AAD guy. There is no AD, everything 100% bound to AAD. Everything's tied to an OAuth token. Everything's tied, right. Like, how about when I make an endpoint decision and I say, I'm going to put dark cubed on, or I'm going to do whatever I'm decided to do that has this endpoint agent, I can make that part of my compliancy policy. I can just say, you can't access your resources if this doesn't exist. Now, I did actually share an article from Kitploit yesterday of a device identity theft. And I was like, damn it, you're ruining my beautiful world for AAD. But anyways, short story is, if you imagine a world like that, you're almost flipping the compliance security story backwards. You're saying you cannot touch the data unless you meet the compliances that are necessary. It definitely made it to where I could be more secure, more predictability, OS level capabilities, and have none of the reliance and anchors that are those entry points for me. So I'm sure it has some fallacies, but
I think in the world of old becomes new, I think ultimately we're going to move back into this remote desktop world where you have a remote desktop environment that's locked down and managed, and you can access it. You know, once you have the write off, you know, you can access your endpoint, and it's all managed and taken care of. And so who cares about your laptop or your phone or your tablet? Because now you're connected to a secure environment. Yeah, exactly.
What are you guys seeing in terms of, malware strains like Moondance that maintains persistence even with an OS reinstall because it's in the UEFI or UEFI, or somebody correct me, but
supply chain, you have the devices, you're working
with the BIOS.
That's one of the reasons why a lot of people, especially like after a ransomware attack, they recommend just getting all new hardware. Now that's gotten a lot harder with some of the shortages that are out there. But, you know, not because you don't know what other kind of implants have been left behind. And if they are at the, if they are going to survive reboots and reinstalls and so on. The good news is not as many threat actors use those as possibly could.
Just the complexities of the cert signing and the insertion and the real technical barriers to entry to do those type of attacks.
There is now. It used to be a lot easier.
Yeah. Right. Modern driver in Windows is a whole different game than what it used to be.
Yeah.
They really tighten that one up. But there's also, speaking of RMMs, there's also software out there like an RMM that utilizes the BIOS to persist. And it works just like an RMM. It's a legitimate tool. And I have seen nation states use that.
Not 4 and 4.
I mean, I, so it, that,
it's a definitely a thing to have.
Yeah, to be, I mean, I bounce everything off of risk, and I, you know, the number of organizations I've gone into where every user's a local admin.
Oh my God.
Right? Like, it's like, it just doesn't, it's like at the end of the day, like there are very sophisticated threats out there that can beat very sophisticated defenses, but it's not required. Yeah. Right. Like it's right. Just,
That, and that is true.
I actually am fighting that fight right now in my world.
How so?
It blows my mind. Just local admin. You should never have local admin. Like I know it's a support burden. I understand its complexity. But
tech support team must be on again.
Yeah. But like, why the hell would you give me local admin? Like it blows my mind. If I'm a threat actor, I have so many more things I can do once I have the ability to already be, you know, elevated in privilege, right? Now I can do so many more Kerberos things. I can do so many more like token harvesting things. I can do so many cool things.
Speaking about Kerberos.
And one of the, and one of the coolest things that I love about like the traditional AD is LAPS, which like try to deploy LAPS in an Azure Active Directory environment, right? Like it gets a lot more complicated really fast.
It does. Yeah, I've actually postulated this to other research teams. I'm like, listen, I've been on AAD Direct with no other, metal in the closet, no dependencies, 100% CA policies as that world developed for the last 4 years since 2018. And I guess that may be five, but whatever it is, four. But, you know, I've asked other researchers, like, where's my attack surface? And it's a much different attack surface, right? It's significantly much more around hoping that we develop the capabilities inside those AAD environments and cloud enumeration. You're seeing it right over the last two or three years. There's significantly better GitHub capabilities to enumerate AAV environments.
So, right. Yeah. And enterprise apps, malicious enterprise apps. That's a,
yes. The best video thing. On that year and a half ago.
Did you guys see that Microsoft just started listing which apps you created in the enterprise?
Oh, they started separating that out. That's so cool.
Yeah. There's a little tab on top and you can say
about time
your apps.
That's so great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so when you actually go in there, building your own enterprise custom apps from a third-party vendor, you can actually separate that out.
Yeah.
The best I've ever seen of that was McAfee's CASB. They did, and this is over like the last few years, and like everything else sucks about it, in my opinion, but they did such a good job of scoring Int apps and doing research and enriching that research on those Int apps. Like it would show up and go, this is owned by a Russian Federation company and it's your Blue Mail. Right. And you're like, no, users cannot use Blue Mail. No, that's not okay.
I think people have to realize that there's a lot of Russian and Chinese money in the tech sector here, and it's near impossible to track down.
Belt and Road Initiative. I mean, that's exactly.
It's okay. We have the Build Back Better.
Oh, where does that go?
All right, we won't get political on this one, but I think there's a serious concern. There's a when hedge funds really started roaring back in the late 90s and early 2000s, there was a lot of Russian and Chinese money that funded those hedge funds. And that are now private equity shops or what have you. So for them to get ownership stake into some high name, some big name companies, it's not that hard. And I'd be worried about that compromise more than, you know, a hacker in a hoodie picture doing something.
It's funny. I had a scanning company that was doing email link scanning for us, you know, about 3 or 4 years ago. And I kept noticing on my know before reports that the people and users were clicking whenever we'd mess up and not exclude an email from that filtering. Users were clicking from China on the links. And I was like, why in the hell is this coming from Chinese IPs? And so I started digging it in, traced it back to China Telecom Pop in California. And I was like, what the, and I find out they're using Google. And so to bring this all to full circle, the third party company was using Google's link scanning technologies. And that was happening in China, in mainland China. And I'm like, wonder why anyone would want to scan every single link that comes through an email. I can't imagine any espionage value. Oh, wait, no, it's all the espionage value to that.
Right.
Like you find that link that isn't secured. Now you can download the document. Like that is a treasure trove. And so I was so enraged and they're like, listen, we paid Google. It's not our fault. I'm like, no, like vet your shit. Like anyways.
Wow.
In my mind.
What else you guys seen out there that causes concern?
I've gotten numb to it. It's just always concerning. After these shows, I could pick out like the next thing that was terrifying to me, but
now you're saying it's everything.
It's just constant.
On the good news side, like, I mean, we've all started, I assume the rest of you are in the same boat. Like we've started to go back to shows. And so we were down in Houston
for sure
for an ASCII show last week. And you know, a bunch of these really small and mid-sized MSPs are starting to ask the security questions, which is a big advancement from 12 months ago. So I think they're all waking up. The security has to be a part of their stack.
I would. Go ahead, Alan, sir.
Jeremy Kirk just released the latest version of his Ransomware Files podcast, where he interviews the gentleman that owned the MSP that
Eric Woodward
was compromised in the Texas ransomware attack a few years back. And listening to this guy, his story is just really fascinating. You know, he was just old school MSP that did some basic desktop support, and they kept asking him to do more and more stuff. And he he was like, all right, you know, I'll do it. And, you know, but it wasn't his expertise. And, you know, now, of course, after that happened, he lost all of his customers and so on. So it's great that the MSPs are asking that. They probably should have been, you know, as you said, Vince, asking that a long time ago.
Yeah. The MSP community in general, Vince, to your point, like, we're seeing this wake up of this understanding that, you know, there used to be this belief, well, I'm not an MSSP, so security's not my thing. If you're touching the data and your fingers are the end of that keyboard, you're at the beginning of the subrogation chain, right? And so you're starting to see that these MSPs are realizing that the legislature is starting to look at us, that there is no barrier to entry. Like, there's nothing. Like, there's nothing to say I'm a MSP. I just put a sticky note on the wall and now I'm an MSP. And so, like, you have this, like, you know, perfect menagerie of horrible that's been building. That's not unlike, you know, the Industrial Revolution, the way that kind of came to be. But these MSPs are starting to wake up. It's like, I went to Reddit, boom, and I had to talk this guy off a ledge. Like, this MSP was ready. He's like, I'm done. I'm just done. I can't do all this. I can't fight against this. I can't. No, but you're aware of it now. And you understand that if you look at and follow a framework, whether it's NIST CSF, whether it's CIS, which is my preference, and start just picking apart the problems and the things that aren't good enough. Guess what? One of those is having local admin rights. That's the biggest hearts and mind fight you're going to have over the next year. Like, but my point is that they're starting to wake up that there's a muscle movement that's going to have to happen. That'll be part of that day to day, or you're gonna have to partner with people. I agree. I'm very bullish on MSP's growth. And
why not just say no? If it's out of you, you don't have the ability for it, say no and pass it on to someone who knows how to do it. MSPs don't have that. MSPs don't have to be security practitioners.
Agreed.
They can be the help desk guy, help Becky print her cat pictures or what have you.
Like, but there's always an acceptable level of access. There's things that come in with that I don't think it's easy to pick that apart like that and say, listen, I'm just the wrench turner. I'm not the plumber. No, you're the guy that's going to destroy the house's overall drainage capabilities by changing the plumbing. Like, I just don't feel like it's that separable, in my opinion. I think they have a partner. Go ahead, Alan.
Yeah. I was going to say, but I also think there's feature creep that comes in, you know, that you know, if you're used to operating a certain way and the next year your contracts come back to you and say, well, I need you to do this. And if you say no, you know, Bob down the street, you know, Bob's MSP is going to do that for me. Even though Bob's not going to do it any better than you are, you know, is it worth the risk of losing that business, losing all of your business? So I do think there's a business reality that clients expect more security capabilities from their MSP, whether that's fair or not. And I don't think it is, because
Yeah, agreed. But if you partner with a Black Point or a Dark Cubed and you tie that into your world and how you deliver service, you're allowing that escalation of economies at scale to still serve hopefully serve. And I'll tell my story on that. You know, I hired an MSSP when we became a $40 million revenue entity. And we actually thought, hey, I'll have an MSSP. Just watch us, watch the watchers. It'll be on all of our assets. It'll be on all of our systems. It'll be on all our things. And then this one day, somebody bought an authentication domain very similar to my authentication domain. And I said, okay, how many people have been there? And I reached out to my MSSP and they said, two. I said, well, I'm sitting in a room with four of us that have been there. What are you using? Well, we're just looking at firewall logs. Well, I was at home and Johnny was on a VPN. Like, what about our SIM? What about all the other things? Oh, we don't get to that kind of correlation. So it's very obvious they didn't do escalation at scale. They didn't have some systemic way to filter the data down and the noise and make it usable. But then you run into people like John and X. Like, you guys have a fantastically scalable solution that actually does add efficiency and economy at scale and true SOC resources, right? So short story is, you know, I think that market even in itself is maturing and that a lot of people that were MSSPs weren't MSSPs.
Right. And you also bring up another good question too is, and I feel like we don't see this enough, is MSPs getting to know or questioning their vendors.
True story.
After utilizing, they don't know. Like, we see this a lot. We have to coach a lot of MSPs how to sell and all that. And there's not many of them that I reach out and really be like, you know, well, what does, you know, just to really know what they're reselling. And Matt goes onto the thing, like, it, you know, it's kind of sometimes an assumption. Well, assumption of what is done. And maybe you don't know what needs to be done. Once you get that clear path, it's good, maybe, you know. Yeah, exactly. That's still a big one. I rarely get on calls with vendors that have actual, like, real tough tech questions. I wish I was on more of those, you know, to be honest.
Well, Vince, didn't you just have a conversation on Steve's podcast about vendors, security vendors and their marketing when they probably shouldn't be vendors? I don't know if you want to go into it.
No, I think I said this in a bunch of different ways, that I think the only thing that you need to have a successful security company today in 2022 is a massive marketing budget. And like, so many of these security vendors, like, yeah. And it, like, Blackpoint, you're not one of these, obviously. I mean, I think you're here for a reason, but like, I've heard stories of very large managed SOCs that are doing relatively low cost stuff and are, it's pure BS.
Yeah.
You know, I had one MSP tell me, like, this vendor X, and I won't name them, but, we unplugged their hardware device, and 45 days later, they called us and asked us how we were doing and if we wanted to upgrade our services. And I said, I've had your box unplugged for 45 days. So like, to me, all this BS marketing makes it hard. I mean, if you're an MSP that's struggling to try to figure out how to support your customers and you look at the marketing that's out there, you know, it's hard to figure out fact from fiction.
True.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll name one like
MSP.
One of our most popular firewalls that we deploy on are Sonic Walls. And, you know, our MSPs get a lot of value by adding us to Sonic Walls. But if you go to the Sonic Wall website, like, they solve everything, right? Yeah. And so, like, if they solve everything in reality, why are their customers coming for extra support? You know, it's just like, it's just that.
That's one of the easiest integrations that I've seen for Darkcube.
Yeah.
And it's,
well, nice. But I mean, it's paradoxical, right? In the sense that, if every vendor is doing histrionic marketing like this, then every vendor that does not participate in that has the fear of not being in the same marketing vein and the same perception. And I think that's part of the challenge. Like, if you look at in the beginning of an industrial revolution, how many people understood steam boilers? How many people understood an internal combustion engine? How many people understood the timing points? How many people, you started getting into that kind of like super immature, you know, buyer, which meant there were a lot of steam engines that blew up. There were a lot of things, there were no regulations, there was no industry, you know, challenge there. And, you know, you started seeing even just now, the Federal Trade Commission is at least starting to say, we're going to start suing if you're misrepresenting your product, right? And I think that should drive some of that in, but we're looking down a long road of trying to drop these histrionic marketings. Like, Carter had pills, lots of them. They did nothing, but he had lots of them, and it was all about marketing. It was all about the stage presence, right? Like, and so, like, in reality, we're going back through some of the similar kind of early stages of technology, in my opinion. Yeah. And I think we're going to see that die. But right now, every single vendor solves every single thing. Like, you just need something, right? You're good. You just need.
Are we talking about Threat Locker here?
But no, I can't.
Threat Locker, and you're good. I've heard that from my customer. They said they won't patch because they have Threat Locker. I've actually heard that.
Are you fucking shitting me?
I cannot.
I'm not shitting.
Listen, I've used Threat Locker in the past. Go somewhere else for that. But
yeah, I mean, it's a cool product, but all your eggs in one basket, like, and you won't patch.
I've got three words for Threat Locker: DevSecOps. Enlighten me to that, and then we can have a conversation about it. But do you guys think you can regulate the industry, or should businesses have a minimum standard of security and practices in place?
I think what should happen, and it's not because it's pay to play, is like, there should be organizations that are responsible for vendor reviews and ranking and categorization that are legitimate and honest.
Yeah.
That's you mean so, not Gartner?
Exactly.
That's the whole pay to play.
But if I give you this much money, what quadrant do I get?
Oh, yeah. I want to buy that top right quadrant, please.
I want to buy that top.
Oh God, it feels like I'm in Jeopardy or now.
Just imagine if there was some independent body that all these managed SOC sim tools like actually put them through their paces and ranked them on stuff. I mean, we see that happen every now with like MDR, XDR, and it's amazing how bad a lot of these tools fail.
I'm with John Urgeson on that, right? Like, and I actually had a really good conversation yesterday with an entity that I won't name yet, and we're working on it. But what if you had an ISAL that was just for MSPs, that was just not focused under the current entrenched players like your CompTIAs and things, but that partnered with CISA, and you started forming the basis of a self-regulatory organization, right? If you started forming the basis of, we're going to share information, we're going to talk about tools, we're going to test tools, we're going to bring our capabilities together. As vendors that participate in this, we might hire pen testers to check each other's code. And when we find something we can't fix, maybe we put up these barriers through this other tool that everybody uses or through these. And so you could start seeing an ISAL collaboration space that could grow into a bi-directional vendor and provider regulatory body that gets sanctioned at some point. And I think that's what's needed. Like, you can't regulate this. It's like the bar association, right? And Board of Cosmetology.
It's different because this industry was built by people in basements doing obtuse shit, right? Like, do you want to cripple your pipeline of talent coming out because of these types of regulation? Which is why I asked, why not just put minimum requirements on businesses? But to your point, Matt, why limit yourself to MSPs or MSP vendors? Make it VARs, IT, any type of IT service provider, anyone that's selling technology. Be a vendor or a provider.
I agree. And I think that you have to take this in baby steps, right? Like, you didn't just like roll out building codes and they were 100% effective. Like, you just got frameworks to build
the way I look at this, and I think the MSP vertical is the worst of them all because it's a bunch of trunk slammers and there's legitimately zero barrier to entry for this, right?
Yeah.
But if you build it only with MSPs, that's where your focus is going to be. And it's not going to be all encompassing or easy to adapt for the enterprise or the VARs or any other type of provider or software solution.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe it's just a pattern or a template. I certainly don't have all the answers, but I do think that you got to start something. And if I could get a few million seats together quickly by grabbing 9 or 10 large MSPs and starting down a path of, we're only going to do this. This is the new standard. Here's next year's standards. Here's our growth. And you start seeing that same kind of effect applied. But I will say I looked at MSPs just because of the force multiplier effect.
Well, if you want real millions of seats and not the 1,000 one-man shops, look at VARs like MTM, Thrive, multi-$100 million technology houses that do consulting. They have personnel all over the country and Canada.
Like, if we want to get philosophical on that, I think the challenge is VARs are there to be transactional. Typically, they don't.
So are MSPs
overall. No, I don't know that I agree with that. I think the good MSPs are not transactional.
What are there, like 5 good MSPs?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm being facetious there, but I don't know a single MSP who's gone in to replace another MSP that said that previous MSP did a good job. Whether that's just habitual, factual, or anything of the sort, but...
Well, you also have to remember that you have an unwilling constituency, right? Like, that's part of the challenge here, too, is that even under education, you still have let's the smart guys handle it. We'll let Alan handle this. He can make the decisions. But then when Alan asks for the budget, they go, we'll do that next year. Like, you know, you kind of have this like really interesting like separation that's starting to kind of boil away, right? Like, for the first time, as I talked about CGIS, my C-suite could theoretically be arrested for this. There's some real teeth coming from certain things. And I think as you start changing that landscape, you're right, Shiva, you have to hold every business to some degree of this culpability and understanding. And I think there's just a lot of places. Where do you start? I think you start with the providers, in my mind.
I think if you start with the businesses, they're going to hold the providers to a higher standard if there's real teeth.
They're not educated enough. And there's no.
Yeah, I mean,
when you put non HIPAA type regulation on them, because HIPAA just. Doctors aren't afraid of HIPAA anymore. They will do whatever they want, put 3389, and to quote Alan here, they're
3390 to be obfuscated.
And, you know, they don't care. So, put real penalties on them. Say, if your business isn't up to scratch for this type of security, you're going to get fined, or maybe you can't get insurance. Have the insurance go. It's back to
insurance
that conversation of
right
having insurance companies
insurance
drive this change.
Yeah. And it is. Sorry, Alan, you were going to say something.
Well, no, I mean, you know, I think you that it's hard. You know, you go to the average dentist and say, well, you need to make sure that you're meeting these standards. They have no idea that they're relying on the MSP or the MSSP to tell them that they've met that standards and kind of taking them at their word. Yeah. And so that's one of the challenges with putting the onus on the business is they just don't have the expertise. I mean, it's like if I go to my dentist and he tells me that I've got a cavity, I assume he's telling me the truth.
Because he went to school, he has a degree. You can kick him out of being a dentist if he breaks enough teeth. You can that shows that healthy ecosystem that we don't have, I think, to your point, Alan. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that goes back to accountability, right? So, I mean, there's just none in the MSP or, you know, the technology space. Even cybersecurity, there's no real...
Or software development, right? Let's really get down to the meat of this. Like there's, you know, Home Depot has their breach and they end up paying less than their resurfacing budget for the North Carolina district for their fine. Like there's nothing. This is why I compare this to the Industrial Revolution. There's so many things that have to be fixed, both from, you know, back to Vince's histrionics of marketing to actually shitty code to Shiva's point, right? Like we really have an immature market across all parts of this ecosystem.
Yeah.
It's maturing quickly, I think. But COVID helped a lot. Ransomware helps even more.
But even that, I mean, go back to some of the other topics that we had. I mean, just saying the word ransomware and just like COVID, everybody's just numb to it. They just don't want to hear it anymore. You know, so trying to get people to adopt a standard because of ransomware or PCI or whatever, that's where a lot of the uphill battle comes into when trying to get companies to apply a methodology to be more secure.
On a somewhat draconian or certainly negative side, if we had an escalated war, if we actually did have conflict in which the bars were off and now this fifth domain of warfare is acceptable, and we also had a bunch of counties and communities with OT capabilities of the water, the OT capabilities of streets and lights and traffic signals and power delivery and train schedules, and if we actually had that, this would be something very different to how the average American feels and really global citizen. This isn't just a US problem. This is everywhere. But how the citizens felt about the fact that they now cannot get water or they're shooting their neighbor for a chocolate bar. Like there's a difference in how that feels than when it's this kind of miasmic, like, oh, we had ransomware. I'm tired of hearing ransomware. What does that mean? But you watch citizens die around you, you have a much different feeling. So I do think, joking aside, that if we had a conflict, and especially a small enough one that it didn't go to scale, it'd be really neat to see the difference in how global economies start to deal with some of these challenges of technology, because it's going to be ugly. I mean, if you were a concerted actor, you've got enough research, you've got enough espionage data to go, I don't give a crap how much you went from a 1.2 to a 2.2 in security. I'm going to globally screw you from your entire operations of how your country functions. Like, yeah, it's not pretty.
Yeah. And, you know, just if you've ever been a part of here in the DC area, we lost power for 3 days a couple of years ago, and it was about the end of the world, right? Like it takes a week for things to start to fall apart.
We don't suffer well as a country.
No. And as we learn in COVID, the supply chain is pretty fragile.
It is. I was talking to Shiva this week, and, you know, even if this whole thing got into a quote unquote cyber war, right, let's just say it all hit the fan. At what point does the people of a certain country come out and start retaliating? You know, you can only take but so much cyber before physical is interjected into it.
Yeah.
Well, it's about winning the war, right? When you start getting the gloves off, taking away operations so that you can't bring munitions, so that you can't bring humans, right? Like, imagine what would happen to us if we had, I mean, other than CIPRNET, NIPRNET, the government entity communication network, our actual infrastructure, we don't have power at the local place. There's not gas in that pump anymore. I can't, you have to imagine how infrastructural this, but for me as a strategy, it would be about once we're at war and those war crimes don't exist for cyber, I'm going to start stopping your country in a better way than I ever could have before. I'd have to come there physically and blow up telephone poles. Now I can shut down programmable logic controllers enough to destroy the grid, the three separate.
But Matt, it's simpler. It's much simpler. And I made this analogy to Shiva. If I lived across the street from you and you and I were fighting, right? And every morning, I would
I'm excited to see where this goes.
I had a tennis ball launcher and I'm just shooting tennis balls at your damn house all day. And that doesn't get you. So tomorrow I do tennis balls and I play loud music. the day after I'm doing fireworks or whatever, at some point in time, I'm doing enough warfare to you, down. You're going to come over and try to kick my ass.
Probably.
And that's what it's talking about. You know, you, when you get back down to simpler, you know, if we were engaging in cyber warfare or any country, at some point in time, the citizens are going to uprise and they're going to take matters in their own hands. And that's when shit gets really, really crazy. You start taking out infrastructure of any country long enough, the citizens are going to uprise and it's going to get really damn ugly. And that's what I'm
talking about. At least we know it's hard to take down a gas pipeline.
too soon.
Well, I mean, not even Colonial. Look at the European gas line that got hacked too. And they were down not quite as long as Colonial, but a good amount of time.
Drain structures, like, yeah, all kinds of fun stuff.
So it's all a mess. But anyway, I know we're getting up close to the hour. So I guess go around the round table. I know everybody talked about, you know, having some webinars coming up and things like that, but want to give everybody, you know, some time for some closing remarks before we close this out. So Matt, if you'd like to go first.
No, I get around. I'm going to be on a bunch of stuff, but thanks for having me on. I always appreciate hearing the opinions of these fine gentlemen. So,
Mr. Javier.
Yeah, it was great. Great talking. It was great to, like you said, hear all the opinions. And
this is a therapy session for me.
It's therapy session.
All right. Get a chance a bit. So, what's going on with you except for your webinar coming up?
Well, webinar's exciting. You know, lots of new features coming up this year. Looping back around to the Ukraine stuff, like 6 months ago, I heard this news about like this civilian cyber reserve corps stuff. So like, call us, man. Like, we're ready.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm in.
And Alan, to you, we do need to get, when you get a moment, the link for your webinar coming up so that way we can get a blast that out as well.
I have no idea what it is. I'll see if I can find it.
Well, to be fair, it is like almost 3 o'clock here where you're at right now. So get some sleep and then
thank you for coming on.
Appreciate you. I will say, that while we've spent a lot of time talking about technical controls, I'm still seeing too many companies falling for the business email compromise.
Yeah.
And that's not a technical problem. Your CEO doesn't want you to wire them money. They're not going into a meeting. They don't want that. So
that's in fact the biggest loss I've ever seen was a BEC. Yeah, for sure. $2 million.
I need gift cards.
Yeah.
Scratch them off. Take a picture, please.
What about the CEO going into a meeting right now when they're sitting right next to you?
There was a commercial. I think I had to dig it up, but where the lady was sitting there at the cash register of a convenience store talking about, I need to hurry up and buy these things and send them off for my boss. And they're like, yeah, hold on. That doesn't sound right as I say that out loud. So I do like, I want to know, I got to look it up because I want to give the company credit or if it's just a, general PSA from, CISA or whatever, but seeing that at least there's some sort of general education. And I remember it's got to be some sort of PSA of some sort because there was no company tagline afterwards or whatever. So I'll definitely dig that one up. But that was really good that I saw.
I did see a lady at Giant, our local grocery store, a cashier at Giant, talk a lady down from buying some gift cards for the IRS. So I was really impressed with that. I don't know if I told you all that story here.
No, that's like, good.
That's better training.
It's a shame that
she's hired.
$15 an hour has to be that line of defense, but good on her for doing that.
We need a commercial on TV that's as good as the egg cracking in the frying pan.
Right.
This is your brain. This is your brain on drugs.
Whatever happened to that commercial? Anyway, I'll digress. All right, everybody. Thanks again. And we'll wrap this bad boy up.
All right. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen and ghouls that are out there on the internet, if you have made it this far, thank you so much for tuning in for yet another episode of AmplifiedAndIntensified.com. You know what? A recent change to the platform. Shiva has put together a new website, AmplifiedAndIntensified.com. If you have heard anything that you have liked about this podcast and you want to engage Shiva or myself, or be able to help sponsor by donating us some coffee. All the links of our calendars, buying us coffee, past episodes of both the podcast and the YouTube version are all now on amplifiedandintensified.com. Go there for all of your needs. Thank you so much. And until next time, take care.